This is the second part of Lynn's interview from Perry Marshall, in which they talk about Six Sigma, One Sigma, no blame, and of course, no excuses. Enjoy.
Now, you made a really interesting comment about Six Sigma, which for those people who don't know, Six Sigma is basically going for like 99.999%. Perfect product, pretty much zero defects. And you said, this is totally screwing up the world. People should go for One Sigma. Can you explain what you meant by that, and how this applies practically to, anybody and everybody?
Well, in a way, it was sort of tongue-in-cheek, because I'd go into companies and they were ready to start a Six Sigma program, and they were a $5 million, $10 million business. And I said, whoa, wait one second. Let's walk before we run. Let's get the clear up the landscape first before we start to, do a building of a major structure. So what the Six Sigma is basically saying, you're going to have to put a lot of effort into making sure you deliver a perfect product. It requires a lot of work. So the big companies were spending huge efforts trying to create Six Sigma. And what One Sigma is, if you look at the Gaussian distribution graph that the Six Sigma people use, One Sigma is 567. In other words, if you look at the 567 point on the graph, it's roughly where One Sigma point is. Hmm. In other words, so what I'm doing is I'm saying, look, let's look at the 567, clean your business up to that level, and then now let's look at what you got. Sort of this is my view on automation, is that people always claim huge benefits from automation, but what happens is the big benefit is the One Sigma benefit that you've gotten. You've cleaned that up, and then all the other things that come in with the automation, allow you to sort of improve productivity and get down to the One Sigma or Six Sigma. But, the other thing I didn't like about Six Sigma was that Six Sigma was focused more on the person doing the teaching than the people doing the work. And I didn't particularly like that approach. In other words, if you got an implementation of a project that was, of significant enough value, you'd get your black belt. And the people that were selling Six Sigma were encouraging people to get black belts. And the black belt was achieved when you spent a lot of money.
so, Imagine that.
And so what I've always said is let's spend a little bit of money and see where we'll end up after that. And that's where the 567 rule comes in, and also the $2,000 or $2,000 to spend to get $100,000 eliminated. So once you get all those ideas off the table, then you can start looking at improving and automation and other things.
Okay, so just to be clear, you're saying that any company can find a way to spend $2,000 and save $100,000?
Absolutely. Every single company. It doesn't make any difference how big it is. And it's always the CEO says, I've been trying to do that for years. I just haven't had the time. And I go, well, yeah, that's why you hired me.
Hmm.
And those ideas are, I think I'm not that smart when it comes to this. The CEO usually knows, and the owner of a small business usually knows where those wastes are, but, they're running so fast, they don't have time to stop and look at those ideas. And so that's how, that's how the war on waste really works. It helps people, stop, take an assessment of your business at this moment in time, and clean up all those things that are bugging you.
Now, you've got this concept called no blame.
Right.
What is that?
It started 29 years ago, literally on the first client I had. We were sitting in a room and I was talking to people at 6:30 in the morning, and people were throwing out ideas. And then finally one of the ladies in the room said, well, hold it. what's my protection here? And I said, what do you mean your protections? Well, I'm throwing out ideas, but, you know, the manager who wasn't in the room is a jerk, and he's going to find out who came up with that idea and come down and chew me out. And those are what we call black knights, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the worker was concerned about reprisal. In other words, there was some situation that there was a reprisal in store if we didn't invoke something to protect them, and that was where no blame came.
So if we solve this problem, I'm going to get kicked in the head. Therefore, maybe we shouldn't solve this problem.
Exactly, and that was the issue I needed to deal with. So I came up with no blame, basically, is change without reprisal. And then somebody said, well, what about accountability? And I said, well, okay, we have no excuses then. So we have both no excuses and no blame. I trademarked no blame early on, but T.J. Rogers, who was a Silicon Valley CEO, had not trademarked no blame or no excuses, but he used it in a book. And I thought, well, I really can't trademark that, but I can no blame. And no blame is really important because it allows the average worker to put an idea into play. It puts the black knight that's going to challenge the employee's idea, you know, to protect the status quo, you know, and it really became clear in that very first company how the no blame and reprisal came to play. In there were 10 classes. This is sort of, I was insane to do it, but I did seven classes at this company from 6:30 in the morning till 5, you know, 6:30 to 7:30, half hour break, 8:30 to 9:30, and so forth. And every class came up with, you know, I was saying, okay, let's talk about wastes. And then they started to throw out ideas. And in every class, the second, third, fourth, whatever, waste was the same one. In one of the classes, it didn't appear at all. And I happened to be looking at those and trying to figure out what the hell's going on there. Well, it turned out that the guy who was responsible for that particular waste was in the class that didn't throw it out. But when that guy was gone one day, that idea came out first. You know, as soon as he was gone, that idea hit the table, and you know, that became clear to me that the no blame was an important factor to play there, because in that class, if I'd have invoked no blame and made it very clear that the CEO has endorsed this, that particular individual would have backed off a little bit and let the idea come into play. More likely, somebody would have thrown that out and watched what happened. It was, you know, the war and waste is sort of a fun thing because it, you know, you're dealing with people and they're trying to, you know, game the system and see how it works. But somebody would have tried if I had said it to begin with. And in fact, in companies afterwards, you would see that come to play, and that when people would see that the black knight was a problem, they would either dodge him or they would challenge him.
Now, we're going to come to black knights in a second, but could you just clarify how you get no excuses and no blame at the same time? Because they're a little paradoxical at first until you really understand it.
That's a good question. No blame allows an employee to take an idea and get it implemented. And it allows the person to take it all the way through without reprisal for that action. On the other hand, no excuses is the CEO and manager's directive that says, okay, you've put that idea into play, now make it work. And there are no excuses for not making it work. We're going to make sure that you do that and provide you the support you need, but you got to get it done. And so the workers, you know, encounter the no excuses when they're saying, well, this, we didn't realize what we were doing and how hard it would be. And I'd say, well, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, but let's get going and try to figure out how to make it work. But usually by that time, I've already cleared away all the issues that the employees have thought they were going to encounter before. So I try to help them do that, you know, and anyone working with me learns how to do that, because that's pretty common. You could sort of see the, you know, the collision occurring, and you try to, you know, divert that. And we get the CEO to buy in early on this, and the CEO is often good at pointing out, you know, problems that might occur downstream, and, you know, that helps. So we get, before the people do their presentation to management, I've gotten the buy-in from him or her that these ideas are all good ones to work on. So it's the old story of, you don't want to surprise the CEO with an idea, you want to pre-sell it. And so that's the job of the trainer in this particular case, to help pre-sell an idea to the CEO so he's got it. He knows what's coming up.
So no blame means that we identify the problem and we don't try to go crucify the person. We just identify the problem, and no excuses means that once you've proven that something is a problem, then the leadership is completely unconditionally committed to giving the resources needed to solve the problem.
That's right.
Is that true?
Absolutely. And, you know, when they're making a presentation in front of a, you know, a particular group of employees, 20 to 50, in a classroom, the CEO is listening to it, and at the end of the presentation, he says, "Okay, I'm supporting that, endorsing it, go forward." Sometimes the CEO will say, "Well, you know, I'm not convinced. I need more data." So employees on that team have to go collect more data and lay their case more strongly to the CEO. But for the most part, probably 90% of the projects are approved as presented, and then those teams that have additional data or information to provide, get that approved and get going. But like you say, once they've given the go, Katie bar the door, let's get it done. And I one of the things that the war on waste does is it puts a lot of pressure on the employees to get it done. You know, first of all, to get their presentation done, that's a lot of work. So they immediately start to feel a sense of urgency, and then, when they get it at the back end and they're starting to implement it, you know, they like to think that the job is done when they make the presentation. They say, "Oh no, it's not done yet. You've got to actually make it happen." And a couple of employees over the years have said, "You mean to say we have to do it?" And I go, "Yep, that's the deal." And and sort of what we get into is, it's a number of people have referred to something called high velocity management or high velocity innovation. And boy, I tell you, this is high velocity. It's in 8 weeks, 6 to 10 weeks, depending on the amount of time we've got. You know, you've got an idea in play, and you're now watching the implementation of that. The fun part of this process is that there are so many funny stories about this process that, I've started to collect those as another book, and it's going to be called The Diaries from the War on Waste, Humorous Stories of Engagement. So anyway, I just have a lot of fun doing the War on Waste, but it's just something that whoever does the War on Waste has a lot of fun. Any of the people I've trained over the years have, you know, just pick up on it quickly and just get into it. Just love it. That's the end of part two. In the next section, we'll talk more about Black Knights. In the meantime, if you want to reach me, you can call me at 510-520-8011, or you can email me at len@bertain.com. In the meantime, looking forward to you in part 3 of the interview with Perry Marshall. Thank you very much.